why we still love the Beatles more than a half century after they first hit the charts. Saturday night, PBS premieres Ron Howard's award-winning documentary, The Beatles, 8 days a week. It follows the very young Fab Four during their touring years and includes a lot of intimate, rare footage. Howard has described it as a coming-of-age film about four young people who really depended on each other during an overwhelming period. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Main Calling, we will talk about why the Beatles remain so popular and beloved. Our guests are Beatles superfans, Herb Ivey of WBLM Radio, Pat Callahan of WCSH-TV, and singer-songwriter Spencer Albee, who is about to perform with other musicians in their 15th annual Beatles Night Extravaganza Concerts in Portland. We invite you to post your five favorite Beatles songs on Facebook and join the conversation. Main Calling is next, but first this news. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For some, it is the early songs that still resonate today. For others, the groundbreaking music they made later in their careers. For just about all of us, there is a Beatles song or memory that sticks with us. On Saturday, Maine Public Broadcasting will broadcast Ron Howard's award-winning documentary, The Beatles, 8 days a week. So we thought it would be fun to invite a few people who love the Beatles in to talk about why we do still love them. In the studio with me, Herb Ivey, who is the captain at WBLM, singer-songwriter Spencer Albee, who is also the founder of the annual Beatles Night Extravaganza at the State Theater on Thanksgiving weekend, and Pat Callahan, co-anchor of WCSH News Center 6 at 5, 6, and 11. What you may not know about these three gentlemen is their deep and abiding love for all things Beatles. So today we're going to learn about your favorite Beatles songs. You guys here with a list and why they believe the Fab Four still matter today. More than a half century since their first number one hit, which was?
Pat Callahan.
I want to hold your hand. In the United States, but their first number one hit in the UK was Please Please Me.
I knew you were going to get it right. Jonathan Smith, our producer, thought we were going to stump you guys, and I said, no, we are not going to stump this crowd.
I lived through all of this. I'm the old one here. No.
So which are your favorite Beatles songs? Have you consistently liked the same, or have your tastes changed? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Main Calling, or post to the Main Calling Facebook page. Also, if you would like, put your top five Beatles songs on our Facebook page. We'll discuss those as well. So I want to start by asking each of you how your love story with the Beatles began. Herb Ivey, what about you? Do you remember hearing your first Beatles song?
I do. I was born in London in 1963. So the Beatles got to the States before I got to the States. So I think I was born into the family and in that area. And I think for my second or third birthday, I got a plastic Beatles guitar and a turntable. And then my life journey was set. I knew where I was going. So very early on, and we had all the British editions, British versions of albums. And an older brother helps his younger brother along the way. So that's where it started for me really, really early on.
Spencer Albee, what about you?
One of my first memories was being in my stroller. So that young, however old that is. And that was my mom's trick while she was vacuuming. She'd put me in the stroller and move me around while she vacuumed so she knew where I was. But I remember her. But I remember her kind of freaking out. I didn't know what was happening. And only later in life did I figure out that she was air drumming to the drum solo in Abbey Road. that thing. So that's how early it started. And then as it went on, once my mom kind of had an idea that I liked that. She did when she was a kid. I got Beatles tapes for, as a reward for good report cards. And then my first concert was Paul McCartney. So my parents are really cool. That's
Your
how I did.
First concert was Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
You are a cool kid.
Lucky.
Oh, my gosh. Pat, what about you? You said you lived through it.
Yeah, I did. I was 7 years old when the Beatles came to America. And the December of 63, which, as you recall, was sort of a gloomy time in this country after President Kennedy had been killed. Suddenly coming over the airwaves, and of course, little kids don't think much about the heavy stuff, but you could tell the mood was not a bright one. And they started playing, I Want to Hold Your Hand. It's like, is different than anything else you'd heard on the radio on your little transistor. And so everybody watched the Ed Sullivan Show, February 9th, 1964. 73 million Americans were sitting watching it. It just knocked me out. It was so exhilarating to watch and to see them play, to look at the guitars they had. They would look so cool. The songs were great. And they were just at the top of their game. What we didn't know as Americans is that they had been honing this craft for many years. It seemed like some kind of overnight sensation. It wasn't. But they were so darn good that it just knocked everybody out. So as soon as I could, I broke into the piggy bank, got enough money to get up to the record store not too far from where we lived, and bought Meet the Beatles, and it's been nothing but Beatlemania ever since. It's a disease that doesn't go away.
Do you still have that original record?
I do. It's the cornerstone of my record collection. It plays pretty well these days, considering I used to have this little portable Decca turntable. Mm-hmm. The tone arm must have weighed about 5 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, but they made them to last back then. You could almost see the shavings of vinyl coming off it. But no, it still plays, and it's beat up, but it still gets the job done.
Okay, so why are we still excited about the Beatles? There's so many, Herb Ivey, there's so many great bands. Why? What is it about the Beatles? What is the magic?
I chastise myself for not wanting to learn about something else like architecture or Russian history or lobstering. And I ask myself the same question, like, why am I? And the 8 days a week is such a great thing because there is new footage. And
the film, yeah.
Yeah. It's a must-see if you're a Beatles fan or you want to get more into it. And so for us, it was like, there was new footage or better footage of Shea Stadium or better sound. And I think it was the right, you know, there was never been a group. There was a singular, there was Sinatra or Elvis, but to get four guys like that at that time in history making that music, and it kind of took us from black and white to color, it feels like to me.
So it's interesting to me because your answer was more a cultural answer and not a, it's because they played in this key or their lyrics are this catchy or it's something more.
The music is amazing and there's never been music quite made that transition that they made to when they stopped touring in 66. But yeah, I think it transcends music into something else.
Spencer Alpie, I want to ask you all about Beatles Night in just a minute, but first I just want to ask you, does playing the music of the Beatles, getting inside of it, make you, obviously it makes you appreciate it in a different way, but what does it do to the music for you?
You'd think maybe you might get sick of it, just by the nature of playing it so much, but you really don't. You have it gives me such a greater appreciation for it. I've pored over these songs just like everyone here. Listening over and over again in headphones, trying to catch little nuances, and then you hear the remasters and you listen, but just being able to pull those songs apart. One thing I've learned is never to say, if you think a song is simple, you're wrong. Like, if you in practice be like, oh, that song will be easy. It won't be easy. None of them are easy.
If you look at the chord chart, it's simple enough.
Yeah.
Except the way they played them, the way they were arranged. And George Martin gets a lot of the credit for how good they were. Because unlike a lot of other A&R men who they might have been paired up with, who were going to force them to do some pop songwriter who works for hire, some lousy tune that they would write that would become a hit but then be forgotten 2 weeks later, he had enough confidence, says, okay, write me something better than this and I'll record it for you. And they said, okay, we can do that. And they kept doing that. And he was the guy who was able to realize their vision. They weren't trained musicians. They were good musicians. Paul, in particular, a natural at almost any instrument. Ringo, star drummer in Liverpool before he ever joined the Beatles. So these are all talented guys. But they didn't know the technical stuff. George Martin not only understood them musically, he understood them personally because of their Liverpool sense of humor. Mm-hmm. George Martin used to record comedy records before that with Peter Sellers and Spike Milligan, the Goons, they call them, very big in England. Mm-hmm. And so they got each other. And he wasn't there to rip them off and put his name on their credits. He was there to help realize what it is they wanted. We want something new, because that's the other reason the Beatles endure to this day. They didn't repeat themselves. They always wanted to do something different. Okay, we got one hit, and Paul would say, we're tired of it by the time that hit's number one. Mm-hmm. We want to do something new. And that's what they did.
But with so many other bands, they do something new, and yeah, the audience doesn't quite get it or like it. I mean, that seems to be more the rule than the exception.
Yeah, and that's the genius of the Beatles. It was pretty gutsy for them to stop touring, where 8 days a week ends at the end of After Candlestick. It was pretty gutsy for them to hang that up and say, the safe thing would be to keep on touring. There was no doubt that they had to change, and that they had that it was about their art, that they felt like they were not compromised. They were going to make the music they wanted to make, and I think George Martin was so important to that.
And back then, pop music was considered disposable. So no one was thinking about the fact that you're going to be listening to this 50 years down the road. But they were doing something of exceptional quality, and it wasn't just the Beatles. You have to look at them in their time, where you had Brian Wilson creating masterpieces. He was just a kid. For the Beach Boys, that and always advancing, Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, all of these acts of that time were so prolific and unique to what they were doing, and we still listen to them today because there was something in the air. I guess it's hard to pinpoint it.
Yeah, it is amazing that George Martin and these four young men found each other in this place and time. Just, I mean, you know, unbelievable, really.
What are the chances too that the band would have John Lennon and Paul McCartney and George Harrison as songwriters.
Yeah, that's right. And that was kismet. You know, that's just really coming together. And if you look at their early days, Mark Lewisohn has written exhaustively about it. The first volume of his three-volume biography, it's 900 pages long, and it only goes to 1962. But you see how many times along the way it could have fallen apart, and it didn't. But, you know, and I think when you look at, you were talking about the cultural impact. One of the reasons the Beatles had the cultural impact they did, the quality of their songs, the fact that they were so ready to go when they got to the United States. Then they made their first movie that summer. And again, pop music movies were usually trash. They were just, here's a few songs and a stupid plot line and let's move on. They said, no, we want to do something that's really going to be fun for us to do. Essentially, it was a faux 2 days in the life of the Beatles. But you now, even if you didn't follow their music closely, if you weren't a teenager who was their target audience, you got to know a little bit about who each of them were. If you watch that movie, you get a sense of who John, Paul, George, and Ringo are. It's a fantasy version of it, but still, it's really tied in because they weren't actors. They were playing a version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And now we put a name to the face and to the song, and you connect with them much better that way.
Okay, so I want to ask about Beatles Night, Spencer Albee, the 15th anniversary this year. Mm. How did you get this idea 15 years ago, and how did it all start?
15 years ago, I booked a club on Market Street called the Big Easy, and 15 years ago, we had an open Saturday, and it was like, and no one, none of the other headliners were available, or it was just open for some reason. We needed something good, and so I was like, I know what I can do this. And I kind of slammed it together, and it was really packed. It just went off.
So you just invited some friends and said, let's play a Beatles album beginning to end?
No, we just played a mixed bag.
Uh-huh.
Probably not very well. Definitely not very well in retrospect. But then, you know, we did it again next year, and then we moved venues because it kept growing and growing. And here we are at the State Theater, and now we're up to three nights in a row.
It's just, State Theater, three nights. The first night, Revolver.
Correct.
And how did you choose Revolver?
It chose us. Yeah. you know, we rotate. Last year we did Magical Mystery Tour, and then I think the year before that we did Abbey Road. And sometimes we don't do an album. We just kind of figure out what we want to do.
Okay, what's Saturday night?
Sergeant Pepper.
Sergeant Pepper. And Sunday?
Mixed Bag. Family Matinee.
Okay, here's the part you have all dreaded, but I'm going to ask you favorite Beatles songs, and I'll ask you, Spencer, which is your favorite album to play, beginning to end?
Abbey Road.
Okay. But I'm going to ask for songs. Herb, do you have a top five Beatles?
Abbey Road album, Penny Lane, I think it's because...
Really?
Yeah, and I think it's the British thing for me. It's such a... It feels it, and for me, I get homesick. And I was, I don't know, 6 or 7 when we left England, but it brings that flavor and that time back for me. So
that's the best two-sided single ever made, I think. Strawberry Fields Forever and Penny Lane.
Yeah.
That's a good 67 cents right there.
so favorite album, favorite song for me.
Okay, what about you, Pat?
I guess favorite song, if I had to pick one, I'd sooner choose my favorite child, but...
Which child is your favorite?
It's not you. I would say I Want to Hold Your Hand again because it started it all. And my mother used to joke about the fact that I would not stop singing it. Not only was I playing the record constantly, I was singing it constantly. And she really, really got tired of the Beatles because it was constant. And not only I went through it, and then my younger brother, 4 years younger, he got into it all and had to experience it. Then our sister, another 4 years behind. So it was this constant flow of everybody playing Beatles records. And she loved music, and she was always open to what we were listening to, but she'd had enough.
Well, this is interesting because we put a post on Facebook a few days ago. What are your top five? And what's so interesting is that everybody's top five is different. You know, Lynn writes, "In My Life, Something, Here, There, Everywhere, I Will, Here Comes the Sun."
She's a romantic.
Mm-hmm. Elaine writes, "Dear Prudence, Hey Jude, Ticket to Ride, Eleanor Rigby, A Day in the Life."
Yeah.
Julia writes, "Julia, no surprise, I Will, Here, There, and Everywhere, Something, and Birthday."
Sappy.
They're all great. They're all great. So we'll keep going then. Wendy, A Day in the Life, Blackbird, Strawberry Fields, Can't Buy Me Love, Ticket to Ride. This surprised me. Hayden, Here Comes the Sun, In My Life, Rain, Something, Strawberry Fields Forever. A few people put Rain. That one kind of perplexes
it's
me.
It's a great song.
Okay,
good.
Okay.
Good to see.
And some of the best drumming. Ringo himself says he thinks it's the best drumming he did on a Beatle record.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there we go.
Those are real Beatle fans, too.
Oh, yeah. So we've got Kristen, Two of Us, Get Back, I'll Follow the Sun, I Will. Obla-di, obla-da.
And, you know, it's funny. I saw recently on one of the online message boards where people like us go kind of crazy and discuss things. They said, what would you recommend for the first Beatle album for a young person trying to get into it? And it's easy to say, well, you know, the 1962 to 66 collection or the 67 mm-hmm, to 70, mm-hmm. because then you get to get the overview of what they're doing. Or should it be Beatles 1, which was a gigantic hit. I think no one expected, what is it, like 30 million yes. copies or something?
Yeah. It actually put them over the edge such that they were the highest selling artist of the 2000s over Eminem.
Yeah. But anyway, you try to think, okay, what do I recommend? And I think I might say Hard Day's Night album because it's the best of the early stuff they did, and they're just starting to transition into things that are a little more esoteric. Yep. You know, I'll Be Back is, and that's the only album. There's a kind of a trivia question. There's only one Beatles album, original album, that's all Lennon McCartney songs. And that's the one. Mm-hmm. George got to sing some, but no room for your songs, George. He was like the angry little brother later on. Mm-hmm. He says, "You never let me write."
He showed them.
Yeah, he did.
All Things Must Pass is tremendous.
It's the best solo album.
Yeah.
Well,
that
brings, those are fighting words.
Here's a trivia question. When the Beatles split up in 1970, each went on to have solo hits. Who was the first Beatle to have a solo number one record, and who was the last to have a solo number one record of the ex-Beatles?
I've got this one. Paul was the first.
Nope.
Yes, he was.
He was.
Yes, he was. And see,
you lie.
Fake news. It's true now. It's true now. And then, George was the last. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay,
George was last with I Got My Mind Set on You
right.
in 1987. Herb, who was the first to have a solo
was it George?
Number one?
Was it, also
it was George.
George.
Yeah. He only had three number one hits, but he was the first and the last. John Lennon only had two.
No kidding.
You know, and Ringo had two. Well, Paul had a whole bunch. But no one would have expected that. And I think that gets to the point where it shows you what a diverse group of talent they really were. And how actually, after the Beatles broke up, the early 70s were a pretty good time to be a Beatles fan because they were all turning out great albums. And just because John didn't hit number one as often as the others did, he was making great records. And we all recognize that today.
Okay. We have to break it up for a little bit.
Aww.
If you'd like
know,
to
right?
join the conversation,
we'll
we have short breaks in public radio. The phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back. Isn't that...
About a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. Didn't notice that the lights had changed.
You make Maine calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And the law firm of Eaton Peabody Startup Group, working to provide nimble counsel in a fast-paced world.
You ever wonder why your favorite artists make the music they make, what those cryptic lyrics are really about, or who they're about? I'm Talia Schlanger. I host The World Cafe, and I am on a mission to get you those answers and a whole lot more. Tune in for candid conversations plus live performances from the artists you already know and love and the emerging artists I know you're going to love right here on The World Cafe.
Monday through Thursday and Saturday evenings at 9 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. A special thanks to Julie from Elliott for her donation of a Honda Fit. Donations to the Maine Public Car Donation Program make a big difference for your public radio station and in most cases result in a tax deduction for you. Towing is free, and the great feeling you get from supporting the programming that you enjoy and count on is priceless. If you're thinking of what to do with your car, please consider Maine Public. It's easy. Just visit mainepublic.org, click on Support, and then the Maine Public Vehicle Donation Program. Thanks. And you know you should be glad. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. She loves you, yeah, yeah, yeah. With a love like that, you know you should be glad.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, why we still love the Beatles. With me in the studio, Spencer Albee, a Portland-based and nationally acclaimed singer, songwriter, and producer. Pat Callahan, co-anchor of WCSH News Center 6 at 5, 6, and 11 p.m., and Herb Ivey, the captain and regional operations manager for WBLM. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us, Sarah Willis, host of In Tune here on Maine Public Radio. Sarah, it was so fun to get to see your studio last week. We got a tour. And one thing I noticed is that your studio is dominated by a poster of the Beatles.
Of course it is. I would not be in that studio if I hadn't been a little girl watching the Ed Sullivan Show in February of 63. That was the determining moment. It made me who I am today, oddly enough.
So why do you think the whole point of this program, why do you think the Beatles endure?
I think it's just as that what everyone's been saying. It was this incredible combination of the time of these four amazingly talented young men, of George Martin, and it just was right. It was a moment, and it came together, and it just is real. I mean, they are geniuses, and you can hear it even now. I was just at Stone Mountain, and Roseanne Cash played Things We Said Today as a encore, and it was so beautiful. It was just, it just never stops. Even when someone else is playing those songs, they are just remarkable, and it's the best thing I think you can do for kids is to introduce them to the Beatles, because it will make them music lovers.
Sarah, you know I'm going to ask you this. Give us your top five.
It's so funny because I can't either, but I did write down a few. I love the song "Yes It Is" because it was just so weird when I was little. You know that and I love it. 8 days a week, I'm only sleeping. I love This Boy because the harmonies are so incredible. And Norwegian Wood, how about that?
Yeah, good choice. And of course, Yes It Is, was John Lennon said, was an attempt to write This Boy again, because they're done in a very similar style. But they're very different because the instrumentation is different and the whole vibe is different. It was one of the great B-sides. There's another, you know, well-spent 69 cents, Ticket to Ride on one side, Yes It Is on the other.
Oh, my goodness. So, Sarah, do you manage to get a Beatles song in most of your programs?
I try. It's one of those funny things that sometimes, yes. But I'm hesitant sometimes because I'm always afraid that people will be like, oh, you play too much Beatles. But then, you know, listening to you guys, I realized there's no such thing.
No such thing, Sarah.
No way.
No so concern.
Herb, do you control yourself? You know, when you're programming the morning show?
I don't. I let it go. I'm here to tell you, Sarah, go for it.
Yeah, I'm not holding back anymore.
Good.
I mean,
good.
You go A to Z.
Yeah, we'll do a whole on Saturday. We'll go A to Z in kind of honor of Spencer's show.
But you know,
oh, this Saturday,
I piggybacked on that unintentionally,
but
But when you ask why we still love them, the song coming out of that break, "She Loves You," that mm-hmm. song explodes out of the radio.
It does.
It doesn't matter how many times you've heard it; it sounds like they just made it yesterday.
And another reason I think it's endured so much, and I mean, obviously, music, the personalities, and the fact that it went off so big. That it was well-funded enough to be excellent, right? They had the budget. But then also the curation of their legacy post-Beatles has been incredible. Mm-hmm. So tasteful. Everything they put out, every image, every album packaging. I mean, they've done a tremendous job with their marketing.
All four have to agree. All four entities have to agree.
Right. And, that must be, like, incredibly frustrating at times.
Yeah.
But which is, and the fans, the hardcore fans always say, we want this or that, but if they don't all agree, like, you know, DVD of Let It Be. Well, you know, there's always, oh, Paul doesn't want it out because it makes him look bad or who knows. But,
yeah.
You know, you don't get it till they all say
I've
yes.
I've seen that movie.
Sarah.
It's kind of a downer.
Thanks for joining.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Oh, I love hearing you guys. I'm going to hang up and listen some more. This is so much fun.
Okay. Have a great Thanksgiving, too. Bye.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to go to Mark calling from Belfast. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. Mark, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
So I was just calling because I just recently saw this documentary probably last weekend through Hulu. And I'll say I am definitely not this big Beatles fan like the guys you guys have there. But I will simply say that after watching the documentary, I've kind of fallen in love with Beatles history. It's just kind of amazing that these four guys somehow found each other to then create some of the greatest music that we know. I mean, the documentary is it's funny, it's quirky. I mean, it's everything you kind of really want, I guess, in a music documentary. But long story short, I was just kind of blown away by the whole thing. I mean, I never knew that these guys stopped touring in 66. Like, are you kidding me? I never knew that, you know? It's just amazing to see that these guys really took their music seriously, and they made a decision based on what was best for the group, and they went through with that. And obviously the work they produced while not touring was sensational. So it's just really amazing to kind of learn these little things about the band. I will say my favorite song is Happiness is a Warm Gun. But, like I said, long story short, amazing documentary, just really well done. And I've found a whole newfound love, for Beatles history, and I'm going to continue seeking out other film and other things revolving around
it. It's a deep rabbit hole, my friend. You may never get out.
I hope you never do.
I mean, I was kind of raised the right way. I mean, I've done about 400 or 500 concerts since I was about 13. So I have music DVDs up the wazoo at my house. So I think that picking up some Beatles ones is definitely a must-do to add to that collection. So.
Sounds like our crowd would agree with you. Thanks so much, Mark.
Yeah, one thing I noticed when it came out and when the announcement was made, well, I was interested because Ron Howard was doing it, and he's great. But still, in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, how many times can you tell this story? You've seen the anthology or the Complete Beatles or just – any documentary, any piece on TV. You know, the story has been told a zillion times and well, but still with the 8 days a week, like there's a big takeaway.
Yeah, my favorite part of that movie is when George says, we were normal, the rest of the world was crazy. And
right.
You definitely feel that, how they were, you know, being mm-hmm. thrown in the back of mm-hmm. delivery trucks mm-hmm. and how crazy it was for them. They're 19.
George was 19.
Yep.
Paul was 20, and the other two were 22. 19!
Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is that one of the reasons they stopped touring is that the rock music tour industry didn't exist. They were out there with Vox amplifiers. The Vox company made them special amplifiers because they knew they were going to be playing to big crowds. They were 100 watts each, the Super Beetle amp.
Right. Well, and to also note, that was it. They didn't mic the amps. They were just – they would crank the amps up on stage, and then when they would sing – you'd be hearing their voices through the same public address that they would announce the baseball games yeah. through.
And so it only made sense because the crowds were not sitting and listening. The fact that the Beatles played as well as they did on stage at that point is amazing because they couldn't hear themselves. No monitors. No headphones, no nothing. And they realized, we're not going to get any better if we just do this. Mm-hmm. And so we need to take a break. Now, they could have come back at some point as the industry grew. Part of the mythology of the Beatles, and the reason we still care, is that they didn't. When they stopped, yes, they continued as solo artists and made some great music, but they never got back together, partly because they always knew it can't measure up to what people expect.
Mm-hmm. I suspect if history had played out a little bit differently, we would have seen more collaboration between the four.
I agree. I think that would have happened, and it's too bad it didn't.
Yeah.
So our colleague and I know mutual friend Sue Tran posted her five favorite, You Never Give Me Your Money, Here Comes the Sun, In My Life, Blackbird, Happiness is a Warm Gun. Our CEO, Mark Vogelzang, his best of all time yesterday, but his favorite lyrics, I Will.
Who knows how long I've loved you? Oh, I love you still. Will I wait a lonely lifetime? If you want me to, I will.
Pat?
It's a lovely song, and it's interesting. That's a live version that McCartney done at some point in the last 20 years. But on the White Album, for those who listen closely to these things and you think you've heard it all, the fact is, on I Will, Paul, great bass guitarist, does not play bass guitar. He does the bass with his voice, going boom, boom, boom. And until you hear that and think about it, you don't notice.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to have to listen again. Going to Paul and Kennebunk. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer, and hi, everyone.
Hello.
I want to say something quick about our friend Ringo. And I also, just for full disclosure, this is Paul Verna, so Spencer and I have a long friendship and working relationship, and I've met Herb as well. So, hi, guys.
Hi, Paul. Hey.
So the thing about Ringo is we can debate, as people have done for over 50 years, whether Ringo is, you know, a good drummer, a not good drummer, whether he just kind of lucked into this whole thing. But the thing that I think is most amazing about Ringo is you can close your eyes and listen to him play, and you can actually see the smile on his face. I challenge the panel to name another drummer that you can say that about. And to Pat's point, I think I Want to Hold Your Hand is probably the song where that's most apparent.
Well, you know, if you see the, in your mind's eye, you see the image of them playing when you hear them, you hear the records. And if you see the film of their first U.S. concert in 1964 at the Washington Coliseum, Ringo is on fire during that show, and he is just wailing away. And you're
hard.
Right; he has the biggest smile on his face. He wouldn't want to be anywhere else in the world at that moment than on that stage with his friends in front of all these fans, newly discovering what they can do.
I'm glad Paul brought that up because that debate tires me whether Ringo's good. Like,
well, they wouldn't have been the Beatles without him, and they
it's
acknowledge
Ringo.
That
he's great.
And they all acknowledge that if they weren't the Beatles, they had to become until he was in the group.
I think the way Ringo plays allows other people in the band, particularly Paul, to play the way he did. So
he played the songs,
right?
You know, there are other great drummers who are more, maybe a little more nuanced in their playing. I don't know, or more accomplished as players. You could take John Bonham, who's just arguably one of the great drummers in rock music. He's tremendous. And was a great drummer for Led Zeppelin. Would that have worked? Would that style of drumming have worked within the songwriting structure of the Beatles? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, thanks for calling and launching that part of the discussion.
Here's to Ringo.
Here's a couple of emails that have something in common here. Let me see if I can find them both. Ian writes, don't forget Sgt. Pepper's Reprise. Hey, Bulldog, paperback writer. I've got a feeling I dig a pony, and somebody else wants us to talk about I Dig a Pony. Go.
Well, that was from the often troubled Get Back / Let It Be sessions, and it was one of John's tunes that you see them working on throughout the film, and they sing it in that famous rooftop concert. We talk about the Beatles' last concert being at Candlestick Park, August of 66, but they did do one more public show, and that was on the rooftop of the Apple Building in 1969. And no one could see them if you weren't on the roof, but people down on the street could hear them. It was echoing through the streets, and Dig a Pony is one of them. I have no idea where that one came from exactly. I've never heard John talk about it or read him.
It's a sleeper. It's a great song. We're actually playing that one this year.
Oh, good.
Our friend Griffin Sherry from the Ghost of Paul Revere will be singing that one. He's doing a great job with it. And it's just such a strange structure. The lyrics is kind of just word painting.
And it's another place where Ringo really does his job so well because it is sort of a stop and start rhythm. Mm-hmm. And he's just making it work. Mm-hmm.
Sergeant Pepper's, the remix of Sergeant Pepper that came out this past year and remaster. I never realized, I've listened to Sergeant Pepper a zillion times, I'm sure, you know, you have as well. But I didn't realize how busy Ringo was back there.
Yeah, that's right. The new mix, back in the 60s, it was hard to mix a record and have drums and bass be as prominent as they need to be. They were afraid the records would skip and all that stuff. And now, with modern technology, they're able to do it better. And the rhythm section is important to any band, and that's the bass and the drums in this case. And both of those instruments now, you have a whole, it sounds like a whole fresh record to me. It's a great listen.
It really is.
We have to take another quick break, but before we do, a word about tomorrow's program. Our tech team joins host Keith Shortall to talk about Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Cyber Monday. Are you looking at smartphones, tablets, laptops? Get your question in now. Email talk@mainpublic.org, tweet us, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Hey, Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it.
I have been silenced for 20 years.
Are we experiencing a cultural shift when it comes to outing sexual misconduct?
The more women speak out, the more other women want to speak out.
The touching and the being too close.
Suddenly, people are talking about it.
And what about the men? I'm Lulu Garcia Navarro. Join me for a special broadcast, Sexual Harassment, The Moment of Reckoning, from NPR News.
Coming up shortly at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
Sometimes at the end of the day, you don't feel like television or even being online. Perhaps a book works best, or maybe just settling down. And we all know that things always go better with music. Sarah Willis here with In Tune Weeknights, Monday through Thursday from 10 to 11. Hope you can join me.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, why the Beatles are still so beloved. With me in the studio, Spencer Albee, presenting the 15th annual Beatles Night at the State Theater Thanksgiving weekend. Herb Ivey, the captain for BLM, and Pat Callahan, anchor at WCSH. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Before we go back to the calls, and there are a lot of them, Spencer, tell me, when do you start rehearsing? How do you figure out how it's all going to work with all these musicians and their busy schedules?
It is a nightmare.
He's a tortured artist.
And I love it. It's a challenge every year. Like last year, for instance, went very smoothly. This year, not smoothly. And it's okay because it's just a series of challenges and you just have to figure out how to get through them. But we, Sean, my partner in this, Sean Morin, does all the arrangements by ear. He pulls out all the orchestration himself for all the strings and all the horns and writes them. We don't lean on any existing score, which is impressive.
He's an astounding musician.
Yeah, I was going to say, impressive is an understatement.
He's a wizard. He really is. And just a sweet guy. But we start planning, January, honestly. Like, it'll come around. And I have, a little piece of paper on the side of my record shelves where I just write songs. I'll be at Whole Foods and
here's a song I want to do this year.
Should do that one. And that's how it kind of comes around.
And you've been rehearsing since October.
In mid-October. Yep. And we have a core group now, which is great. Andrew Hodgkins, who used to play with me in his Fast As, has moved back. So he's back in the drum seat after a 10-year break. Dan Capaldi is our Swiss Army knife, Blythe Armitage on vocals. and John Rudes, my former bandmate from Rustic Overtones, on bass. And everyone that's in the group has had their chair for a while and will keep their chair until they don't want it. They're kind of like, Supreme Court judges, I guess.
Peter, we're going to go to Peter in West Baldwin. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you? I was just going to point out that even though the Beatles' first formal performance was on the Ed Sullivan Show, I'm probably a little older than most of your panel, but Jack Parr on The Tonight Show showed a clip of the Beatles performing at the Cavern Club.
Yeah, that's right. He did. Yeah. In fact, he was trying to scoop Ed Sullivan. He had kind of a rivalry with Ed.
And they were throwing jelly beans, and he couldn't understand why they were throwing jelly beans. And that he just sort of hoped that this wasn't going to happen here. And we all know what happened after that.
Indeed, we do.
Peter, thanks for calling with that memory. This is kind of funny. An email from Lynn. Lynn is somebody whose list I read earlier, and one of you all called her a romantic because she said, and she says, but of course I'm a romantic. When the Beatles were on Ed Sullivan, I was 13 years old, and I knew they were singing just to me.
Oh. And so, did she think she was going to marry Paul? That's a frequent thing you hear of people who are around then.
Yeah.
They're still waiting.
he's still something. We've got Valinda in Bangor calling in. Hi, Valinda.
Hi. Oh, this is the best show ever. I'm so excited. But outside of all the technical stuff, I wanted to make a couple of social comments about the Beatles.
Go ahead.
And what they did. The first thing I think they did was I was graduating high school in 1969. So in 1966 and 7, I'm in junior high school. They brought in the sexual revolution. They were talking about cohabiting without marriage. They were talking about what was going on in places like London and the big British cities. We were starving for that up here in Maine. We couldn't get to California. We had Dow Air Force Base with all these progressive kids here. We were all just chomping at the bit to start new lives much earlier than, any of our parents and grandparents ever did. So they brought in a sexual revolution that we grabbed and we went for. And it brought a lot of freedom to women, especially. Women were able to finally be sexual and be able to talk about being sexual. And even though it created some real, flaws in our social character, what they did brought us right into the 20th century and got us ready for the 21st century, in a way that was so necessary. It took away stigma. And where there was still stigma, it made the stigma much lighter and people could start getting beyond it and talking about it.
Belinda, thanks for calling. Yeah,
Belinda, you make a great point. And the other thing I would add, and some of us were talking about this before the show, is they also made a big change in racial relations because, first of all, the Beatles themselves loved black artists, all the R&B and the Motown and so forth. But they also insisted we would not play before segregated audiences in the United States. It made no sense to them. Why wouldn't you let anybody come and listen? And in the documentary, the Ron Howard film, 8 Days a Week, that we've been talking about, Whoopi Goldberg makes an appearance. And I never would have associated her as a big Beatles fan somehow. Her story is so sweet and touching about what it meant to her when she was a child and a young girl.
9 years old,
So it's something to watch for when you watch the film, and you must all watch it.
That was another great. Oh, sorry. That was another great part about that movie. One of the unknown facts. And learning that they were so instrumental in fighting against segregation and against racism was there's this thing that you already like a lot, and it also is this awesome thing, too. You know, that's a great part of the movie.
Belinda, thanks for your call. Email from Denise. This boy, there are places I remember, If I Fell, When I'm 64, Help. And she writes, I had two concert experiences when I was 14 and 16, the Boston Garden in 1964 and Suffolk Downs in 1966. Extraordinary. I was that girl.
I'm jealous.
Yes.
My mom wouldn't let me go because, again, I was 7 years old or 8 years old when they first toured the stage. Boston Garden, she'd seen those films, so all those girls going nuts. Mm-hmm. You're not going there. Then Suffolk Downs, what a weird place to have a concert. Mm-hmm. You know, but I still would have gone had I been allowed. But,
Didn't Gavazos go to that show? Hmm? Didn't Andrew Gavazos go to
Suffolk Downs? He might have been, yeah.
Yeah. We'll go to Steve in Hebron. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yes, great show. Just wanted to talk a little bit about, my perspective. I remember when I was 9 years old, I got a transistor radio, and I thought I was, basically listening 24/7 to the Beach Boys until the Beatles showed up. And when I heard that, I said, wow, this is different. And that motivated me to learn to play an instrument, and I ended up becoming a bass player. And I really just have appreciated now. I'm 62 now, and I still play and love playing Beatles, especially the stuff that's, because I can sing some of it, is in the keys that I can sing. Mm-hmm. And I just really enjoy their covers of other artists' material, the pop stuff, like,
Please, Mr. Postman.
Up until 1966. I've just gravitated to that stuff. And I also wanted to note that how much I really think that George Harrison was really an underrated guitar player back then.
Oh, yeah. Well, amen.
Steve, thanks so much for calling in. And it's interesting you mentioned the covers because, 70 covers they recorded. Uh-huh. I looked it up this morning. 307 songs, 70 of them covers. So,
Now they wore their influence as well. They were proud to do Carl Perkins tunes, mm-hmm. and Little Richard and and Chuck Berry. They just loved all those artists. And as we all, everybody's a fan of somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's what gets you started in music. You want to do what they do, and then you find your own way to take it further.
Now, when they wrote Please Please Me, they were basically trying to rip off Roy Orbison. It was a lot slower.
Melodically, yeah.
Well, no, even the song, The Feel, was a lot slower. And George Martin, again stepping in and saving the day, was like, "Speed it up, boys."
Yep. Yeah. But he was all. But John Lennon said he was also inspired by Bing Crosby, who had a record called "Please Lend Your Little Ears to My Please," and he liked wordplay, and he thought, "Oh, two different words that are please," and he please please me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Smart.
We'll go to Freeman calling from Old Town. Hi, Freeman. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just like to add, I've been in the music business selling music since the mid '70s, and Beatles never go out of style, and I always have had those that question: what do I buy my kid for their first Beatles record?
Mm. And what do you come down on?
I don't. I can't.
Yeah,
I'm still in the music. I left corporate and went back, and I'm running a local chain, a main chain that you're probably familiar with. But I always ask people when they buy a Beatles record, what's your favorite Beatles record and what's the best? And they're always different. Everybody has a favorite play, but everybody has one that they deem the best. And, for me, it'd be like my favorite White album, but the best is Abbey Road.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was about to ask you, Freeman. I wasn't going to let you off the phone without answering the question.
And when you ask for favorite song, no one ever says Mr. Moonlight. It's so sad.
That's okay. That's okay, isn't it?
Freeman, thanks for calling in. I love how Beatles, I can only speak for my own kids, but you all have kids too. My kids have loved the Beatles and gotten the Beatles from the time they were really, really little.
That's our job as parents.
I would just like to also put out a note there, in case my wife is listening, I do not have kids.
Okay, so Herb and Pat, do your kids have favorite Beatles songs?
I'm not sure what their favorite songs are. generally. My daughter in particular is an enormous fan and always has been. She's seen McCartney several times. She takes pride in wearing a Wings t-shirt when she goes to a McCartney show.
I love
She's
it.
More modern than, you know.
Okay.
And our son, he likes it. It's not necessarily his favorite music, but he does like it. We dragged him one time to one of those fests for Beatles fans, and he looked at it like a sociological experiment. What is wrong with all of these knuckleheads in here?
Including
but he
kind
of got it. Yeah.
Herb, what about your kids? What do they love?
They've loved it since they were babies, but now I have them a 13-year-old daughter and a 17-year-old daughter. My son is 28, but to see the teenagers now hearing Rubber Soul or stuff from Revolver or these songs and getting the next level of meaning as they are teenagers is really fun, and to see them explore the band as we did is fantastic.
I have a really special experience doing these shows that we do with my friends who do have kids who have been coming now for years, especially since we started doing the family matinee, and how really totally excited they are about it. And even with all still the new modern music, and they're into that too because all their friends are, but also the Beatles.
That's what's funny about my kids. I mean, they'll listen to music that I kind of think is atrocious, and I'm not even sure you'd call music, but then they'll listen to the Beatles.
What's your favorite? What's your top three?
Nice Every one. Time somebody mentions one, Herb, I'm like, oh yeah, that one. Oh yeah, that one. Hey Jude. Oh yeah, Hey Jude. I love Hey Jude, and I love Let It Be, and I don't know.
So hard, right?
The first song and maybe the only song I ever learned on guitar was Blackbird, and so I've got a special place in my heart for
Good
there.
Good place to start.
So,
I guess who's got a gig this week?
Oh, that's funny. We're going to go to Eric calling from Oakland. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi there.
Eric. Hi.
Howdy.
Hi there. I just wanted to say I watched Ed Sullivan when I was 11 years old because my sisters insisted, and they were older and commanded the TV, and that got me hooked. And I learned to play the bass guitar and the rhythm guitar listening to Beatles songs.
There you go.
Yeah, what a debt we all owe Ed Sullivan. He brought us the music.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks, Garrick, for your remembrance. And we'll go to Peter in Spruce Heads. Peter, you may be our last call, so if you could be brief, that'd be great.
Sure, I'll try. I'm trying to share a story about learning to play music. I heard an interview on the radio with Joe Walsh, who said that he learned to play his guitar by mastering Beatles songs.
Herb is nodding.
Yeah, Joe Walsh says if you want to learn how to play rock and roll guitar, learn everything on the White Album, and you'll pretty much have it covered.
All genres. Yeah. And then, of course, he got so deep into it, he's Ringo's brother-in-law now.
that's commitment.
He liked it so much, he bought the company.
Peter, thanks so much for calling. And thank you to everybody who called in today. What a fun show. Thank you to you three for taking time out of your schedules, especially Spencer. I know you're really, really, really busy right now getting ready for the show.
I appreciate you having me on. I'm a big fan, so it's fun to be here.
Pat Callahan, co-anchor of WCSH News Center 6 at 5, 6, and 11. Herb Ivey, the captain and regional operations manager for BLM and other stations. Spencer Albee, Portland-based and nationally acclaimed singer-songwriter and producer. He presents the 15th annual Beatles Night at State Theater this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Tickets are going fast. Sandra Harris ran the board today. We had additional help from Roddy Nickpour. Today's show will be broadcast tonight again at 8. Main Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Keith Shorthall hosts our tech team. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Main Calling on Main Public Radio.